What are the key challenges that you guys have all agreed on? So I'm just going to jot down the pedagogical challenges. Robin is going to jot down the curricular challenges. What was the key challenge that came out of your discussion? Clarkson.
Oh, yeah. I think I said the most pressing concern is where teachers who are concerned about classroom management will use things knowing that they can get a class silent because, back to the word gratuitous. And if I just got this thing on Frederick Douglass, if he chose to stop showing his back because of the way that it was being used, then maybe we should respect those sorts of decisions.
Yeah. Okay. Would you say that image, that famous image of the wooden back, does that have a place at all in the classroom?
Well, we know that image is going to make every kid silent and everyone's going to be wanting to talk about that.
Yeah.
But then if we're going to have that hour as a department where we talk about race, maybe that's one of the images we could use to say, do we want... what? I'm not saying don't use it, I'm saying have the chat.
Absolutely. How do we use it, if we do? So avoid the temptation of graphic...
I've never even thought that
image,
that was a thing, that people would be doing it in order to... But
no,
it's,
I didn't. So are you saying use it as a disciplinary...
So, well, it's saying
sensationalizing.
It's like why do some classes sit through 3 hours of Roots? Because the kids like it. You know, it's kind of like you're using things in order to avoid challenging situations in your classroom. Yeah.
And you can show it without context, and you know the teacher using that might say, "Oh, they love it." You know, what aspect of they? I've heard that before. Mm. And what is it that they love? Well, they love seeing action. And is that what we're going to reduce it to?
It's a bit like in film, if, you know, some of these action films where it's just violence, violence,
absolutely,
violence. There's
no
real context to it. Where actually a film with maybe just one very almost an intimate scene of violence that's just very singular can be a lot more profound, but it's got to be contextual, and it's got to be linked to an element of learning. And I think if you showed it in a series of 20, it's just like, you know, just for the horror factor, a bit like when you're showing Trenchfoot or whatever, it loses a bit of its edge if you don't put it into the context of something like an individual story, for example.
Yeah, well, we're using it to entertain rather than perform. That's a really good point about it being used to sort of subdue unruly children.
I think there's some links there with Holocaust education as well, and some of the images that are unfortunately used in some classrooms where, you know, it's not being put forward again, it's sensationalising and, you know, trying to get...
But Roots is good because they humanise Kunta Kinte before anything happens to him for a long time. But I'd be interested to chat about use of Roots. But
yeah, I was going to say, I mean, two people show it from beginning to end. You know, it's quite a long series, isn't it? It's got two lessons. Which two episodes do you think they're going to show?
If he skips straight to the middle passage, that's a problem.
Absolutely.
I think even the use of things like Roots, for example, 12 Years a Slave, I watched that once, I never watch it again. And Roots, I still haven't finished watching it because you have issues of trauma, you know.
But what we're saying is, we're saying it's important to teach violence and terror.
Yeah.
So therefore, what we've got so far is really important. What other challenges are there then, Nathaniel? Lucy, sorry.
Trauma and reverberations of trauma as well, and I've seen how students have connected historical violence to contemporary violence, from stop and search, police brutality, even in Hackney, and students making direct links between equipment used to trap enslaved Africans. We were working with the Runaway Slaves Project with Glasgow, and they were using images of newspaper articles where they'd been trying to find runaway slaves, and they used one that was from Hackney, a teenager who'd been captured, and there was an image of him having had a collar around his neck, and students made immediate connections to stop and search. So there's a kind of trauma experienced, and I think our duty of care around that needs to be deeply thought through.
Yeah. So I mean, there's two things. One is a curricular thing about the connections with present day, but then there's a pedagogical one about the classroom being a safe and secure environment in which you can introduce that.
I think your reading that you set as well indicates some kind of possibility there about the kind of necessity of slow thinking around this.
Yeah.
And
that it has to
so that the violence isn't sensationalist like the examples that have just been given, that this is a very careful, slowly thought through, staged session.
Thank you, Lucy. We're going to move, sorry to cut that table off, we need to move around to the other table. Sally?
Well, we were talking about the importance of kind of striking a balance between being thoughtful and kind of avoiding creating trauma amongst the students and also not straying towards the gratuitous. So it's important to address it, but to think really carefully about how you address it, because you don't want... So I used sections of Roots, we used it with Year 7, and my classes were fine with that. My colleagues' classes, they actually had four parental complaints about it. We had children in tears, they didn't want to come back into history, it was a big thing. But then at the other end of that, you've got, you know, students that are just like, yeah, the same with the Jack the Ripper stuff that we were talking about last night, that they just want to know about the violence, they're not really interested in the rest of it. So trying to work out how you can pitch it right in between.
So what do you, I mean, without going obviously into details of personhood in terms of, but why, what's the difference between your classroom and the other classroom?
Why my colleague got complaints and I didn't,
yeah,
what you mean. I don't know, I think I probably set it up better. I think I, you know, said, you know, we're going to look at this, it's not going to be very nice, you're not going to like it, but it's important that you engage with that, because this is, you know, if you ignore this, then you're not getting the whole picture. You need to be kind of, and so I think maybe she didn't set it up as thoughtfully.
Yeah.
I think there's the issue as well of the huge diversity of the students' responses that are unpredictable to us.
Mm.
That in many different topics, we can predict largely how students might respond to an image, but when we're talking about this. And again, it comes back to the issues of race and teaching it as a white teacher with students in the classroom who are black and students who are white, and that becomes more unpredictable about how students are going to take it. And I think, you know, going back to the issue of different classrooms and different contexts, we had a horrible situation a few years ago where a teacher used the image from in America in the 1930s, the hanging of Thomas Shipp and Abraham, I can't remember his name, but the lynching of two black men. And a white child in that class's father had killed himself by hanging 3 months before, and it was horrendous for that child. So I think it's those linking those traumas and the unpredictability of how much can come up in lessons when you're covering this.
Just so Stella, and we'll come to Tom and Claude. Yeah.
Yeah, two things. I think one, obviously, if you're going to teach a gendered history, you'd have to talk about sexual assault and rape, and how you do that with Year 8 obviously is incredibly difficult.
Mm-hmm.
I think also how you teach the difference between the violence of the oppressor and the violence of the oppressed. And I read quite an interesting thing recently about Tarantino and Django Unchained versus Inglourious Basterds, and how actually, I don't know if I agree with the argument, but how lots of the violence in Django Unchained at the end is quite cathartic, and actually how you can talk about, so you're saying, the violence of the oppressed being that, you know, moment of agency, moment of empowerment, and I just think that's quite a difficult thing to get across.
And that's, I mean, we've had a similar situation in terms of the sexual abuse.
Yeah.
Because actually,
yeah,
there are children in our classrooms who have been abused,
mm-hmm,
and
yeah,
who have suffered exactly what we are talking about. So, you know, that, and then that's, yeah, that's another facet of that trauma.
Yeah, I think if we understand that's the territory that we are going to broach, then it's really important that we forewarn or signpost,
yeah,
our lessons and make it clear that this is going to come up and that we're going to deal with it in a respectful, compassionate way.
Tom?
I was just wondering if anyone else had heard about, there was an awful situation in another school in Bath where some students at break time performed a mock slave auction on a black kid in the year. I mean, it shook the city because it only came to light once some parents complained because the white boys who'd done it, it was a boys' school, were given a light sanction. In fact, no, the head teacher wanted to expel them,
yeah,
but it was overturned by the government.
Yeah.
And this whole, you know, it was a really big thing in Bath.
investigation.
Yeah. But what no one seemed to say was, like, what the hell is going on in the history?
But also, there's a kind of, I think with those things, there is that sort of reaction. It's like the reaction in New Zealand after Christchurch. Oh my gosh, how could that happen here? Oh my gosh, how in Bath could such a horrible thing happen? Because Bath's so nice, and we're all good people. And, you know, New Zealand said the same thing. How can it be happening here? Such a lovely, lovely country. And then, you know, there's some historians in New Zealand who are saying, excuse me, right? What are you talking about? Do you not understand? And the truth is, they don't understand their history because they don't study New Zealand history. And, you know, Bath doesn't understand its history if it's shocked that that kind of thing is happening in Bath. And so, it's important. Thank you, Tom, for that.
I will be brief, I promise. But I just wanted to bring up, well, two things. First off, I think we should all feel like open about saying that we have made mistakes on this, and I think one of the things that's really crucial is to not necessarily vilify people that have made mistakes on this. I mean, I as a teacher use analogy a lot in teaching methods of power and control. We were talking about use of force, and the school is the kind of the world that the student knows. So when you talk about force, you talk about religion, you talk about trade, you try to draw out analogies of things that work. And I think what's really important is sometimes that can go wrong. And I think that maybe we can think about how sometimes things just need to be taught differently. If I'm talking about force, and I've talked about it in relation to like how Mansa Musa ruled in Mali, that's one thing. But when you're talking about force and using analogies of detention and merits and all of that, that's one thing. But then when you start talking about it in analogical term in relation to this, you get down some pretty painful and awkward territory around forms of control and what force would look like in the school as opposed to what it looked like on the slave ship.
I mean, I think with analogy, it's the same with the issue of empathy. I think it's very much connected to what Trevor Bernard says about transatlantic system and so forth, that, you know, if this is a dehumanizing experience, which I think it undoubtedly was, that the whole experience of enslavement was dehumanizing, then to use human analogies or any kinds of analogies and any sort of empathy exercise that says, well, how would you feel if that was you? If it's dehumanizing, then we can't empathize because we're human. We won't be able to understand what it is to be dehumanized because we're human.
And actually, if we don't embrace this, then we are going to eventually end up with a situation that we've just looked at where the student goes, you've lied to us, or you haven't taught us what we need to know. So actually, by kind of being mindful of how you deal with violence, because you're going to have to teach it when you look at things like slavery, then you can actually open up that dialogue, can't you? And it's just being mindful of that dialogue, allowing them to have that dialogue, rather than shutting it down, or not actually accepting that it existed.
And that requires teachers having produced and created that space over months. Like, and I think that's one thing that I potentially would add to your list of principles. I've not read them for 2 years, so I don't know if they've changed. So maybe
list of?
Or principles.
Oh.
But about the insurance that this is not done by cover, non-specialist, or like it's not set in that regard, but it has to be done by a professional who's had CPD on it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's the HEDP model.
So the
that's the HEDP model.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah. So thank you. I mean, we're going to take all those things on board and develop them, but we'll just give you an idea of what we came up with in our own thinking. That the first thing is to consider, in terms of curriculum, should there be an overall thesis about violence and history? If so, if there should, How do we situate ourselves in relation to the position of, we just took two kind of sort of polarised ideas. One, France Fanon, wretched of the earth, who's talking about the awe-inspiring act of violence clears the disabilities inflicted by colonial rule off the soul of the colonised. Violence is a cleansing force. It frees the native from his inferiority complex and from his despair and inaction. It makes him fearless and restores his self-respect. This is that violence of resistance that he's saying, well, if the thing that has oppressed is totally and thoroughly and in every strand imbued with violence, and therefore to actually resist that oppression, to overthrow that oppression, violence is going to be necessary in order to do that. Now that's Fanon's thesis, and it's been hugely influential, but it's also hugely problematic.
Never mind against certain laws of the land and teacher principles, so it's awkward.
So the alternative?
Yeah, I mean, we tried to find someone as far on the other side as possible, but so Steven Pinker is sort of a liberal American psychologist slash, you know, whatever else he dips his hands into. And the position that he holds, I suspect, is the one that we're supposed to hold as teachers. He says, the age of reason and the Enlightenment brought many violent institutions to an end, though the first systematic movements to undermine these institutions were nearly strangled in the crib and began to predominate only in our lifetimes. They originated in the grand change in thought and sensibilities that make up the humanitarian revolution. It's a very hopeful narrative. It's one which ignores huge chunks of human history which are inconvenient to his thesis. But yeah, the idea, and the section on slavery actually is about five pages, which is, I think, indicative of the message that he's trying to convey, particularly the legacies which he neatly omits to create this idea that things are very good right now. I suspect they're very good for people like Steven Pinker. But where do we place ourselves on, you know, on a continuum between these two ideas? And I think that is something that we need to understand just so we can get our feet firmly on the ground to hold firm, clear opinions and be able to direct the kinds of conversations that, you know, will be difficult with our children, clearly.